Welcome to the Besties with Breasties podcast. Sarah Hall here. I am a certified health and wellness coach, athletic trainer, mom, and breast cancer survivor. I help women overcome their own mind drama to make mind shifts that open up the possibility for their most empowered and energetic life.
And I am Beth Wilmus, author, speaker, and founder of a human investment organization, otherwise known as a nonprofit, called Faith Through Fire. Our mission is to reduce the fear and anxiety that breast cancer patients feel and replace it with hope and a path toward thriving.
This podcast is about our experiences with breast cancer
and life after as young survivors and moms. Hello.
Hello.
Oh, hello. Sorry, Ms. Chirpy. Look at you. Okay. Guest day.
We've got a guest day. Although I feel like medical skepticism has been full of guests.
It has to be. It's all these people's perspectives and everybody's. Yeah. So this is part of our medical skepticism series, which is going on and on and on because so many people have so many things to say.
So many things. And it's what's really interesting is that they kind of all refer to each other.
They do. Yeah. I will say I'm seeing a pattern. When you and I kind of do our breakdown of everything that we think after we get through this series, it'll be interesting. But there are definite trends or patterns that I'm noticing among some of these scientists, providers.
It's like they meet all like once a month and they just probably have coffee on Zoom or something.
They probably do. It's probably their own community. I'm sure they're very familiar with each other.
Yeah.
So I have a question for you.
Yes.
Was your mammogram, the one that confirmed your breast cancer, was that your first ever mammogram?
Yeah.
Yeah, me
first
too.
First and only.
Yeah, me too.
One and only.
Me too.
And you know what? I chose a double because I never wanted to do that again.
I never wanted to do it again either.
Yeah. But like, mine was like, you know, I had a big old pregnant belly and they had to like cover it with all the...
Oh, the shield.
The shield. Yeah. And that the lady was like standing behind me all like leaning back like she was driving a horse.
Well, and she didn't want it on herself, right?
No.
So she doesn't want the radiation. She's trying to protect your baby. Yeah. And yet, you know, and she's trying to, you know, radiate your boobs.
All you ladies who've had children out there, imagine your like tender pregnant breasts smashed.
Ooh.
I think we all just went cringe.
Yes. Yes. So we're talking to a breast surgeon today about mammograms, and that made me think of our friend.
Yes.
And you want to kind of share her story a little bit of, because you went with her.
Yeah, I did. So my friend, I didn't realize we were going to be talking about this, so this is going to be really fun, but she would not care. My friend is kind of, you know, medical skeptical. She's actually the OG and turned me on to my medical skepticism. So, anyway, she is done she's done a lot of reading about mammograms, and so she has been dealing with a cyst in her breast and had to go back for a follow up, like just to see if it had grown. And she was going in specifically for an ultrasound, and she had already fought with the previous office on the phone with some other people about them. They're like, "Well, why don't you just get a mammogram?" And she's like, "Well, I just don't want a mammogram." She's only like, I'm trying to remember, 36, I think.
Mm-hmm.
So she's young. Mm-hmm. And to then get started on a mammogram, I mean, that just sounds like, you know, the cycle. But anyway, we go into this office and she is just, she's treated like dog poo because she won't, you know,
because she
it.
Won't capitulate
on
like the mammogram.
Just not kind. Like they didn't talk to her really like a human. And like, I was just sitting there like wanted to cry for her. So, and I'm like, I'm so glad I came with her.
Yeah.
But the lady tried to be like, you can't come back here.
Yeah.
With her.
Yeah. You guys told me that later. And I was like, wait a minute, you're her support person and you couldn't go back there.
I mean,
with her?
I sort of get it because, you know, she was having a breast ultrasound and she's like going to be, you know, bare chested. But I'm like, lady, this is my best friend. I've seen her give birth twice.
Yeah. I was like, that's not their decision. That's your decision.
Yeah.
Yeah. I just thought it was really interesting that she went in knowing full well what she wanted and then was met with such resistance and hostility, really.
Yeah.
But, you know, to her credit, she held firm and
totally
got what she wanted. And that's what we're constantly telling women. It's like, listen, you do you, boo.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So today we're going to be talking to Dr. Jen Simmons. Dr. Simmons started her professional career as Philadelphia's first fellowship-trained breast surgeon. And after spending 17 years as Philadelphia's top breast surgeon, her own illness led her to discover functional medicine. So she basically became enamored with the concept of creating health rather than killing disease. And so she left traditional medicine and her surgical position in 2019. And now her mission is to help women anywhere along the breast cancer journey to truly heal. So first, we're going to talk with Dr. Simmons about the current trend of early detection campaigns for mammograms.
And then we'll talk to Jenna about her path in medicine and the detour she made with her own health scare.
Oh, after her own health
after
scare,
her
right?
own health scare, yeah.
Yeah. And finally, just what lifestyle choices can we do? What does Dr. Simmons want women to know when navigating their health after a diagnosis?
But before we do that, let's hear from our first sponsor.
Anne's Bra Shop features skilled mastectomy fitters ready to assist you in selecting the perfect breast forms, bras, swimsuits, and camisoles for your post-surgery needs. They have three locations in the St. Louis area, Chesterfield and Wentzville, Missouri, across the river in O'Fallon, Illinois, and a fourth location south on I-55 in Cape Girardeau. Visit Anne's Bra Shop at www.brashop.com to learn more. Welcome, Dr. Simmons. Thank you so much for being here.
Oh, thank you. It's my pleasure.
I want to talk a little bit about the trend of early detection. I just saw a post the other day by a very well-known breast cancer nonprofit that says, we know and research tells us that you can prevent late-stage breast cancer diagnoses with regular quality breast screenings. Is that, early detection is like a huge thing in the medical space right now. Mm-hmm. What are your feelings on that?
Yeah. So unfortunately, that is simply not true. I know why early detection is such a big deal, both from the medical side and from the patient side. So from the medical side, this is the very cynical part of me, but it also happens to be true. Breast cancer screening is big business. Right. And it's not just the screening that makes money. It's the screening that brings the patients in. And it brings the patients in for a number of reasons. First of all, when you use mammogram to screen, it's highly, highly, highly inaccurate. In fact, mammogram will miss 40% of cancers in 40% of the screening population. And that is the women with dense breasts. So when you have this inaccurate test, it just creates more tests. Right? So the more mammograms you do, the more callbacks you're going to have, and they make a lot of money on the callbacks. The more ultrasounds you're going to do, because that's an adjunct to the callback, the more biopsies that you're going to do, and they generate a lot of money for the system, the more lesions you're going to find, the more surgery you're going to create, the more cancers you're going to find, the more procedures you're going to do, the more medicines you're going to give, the more treatment people are going to have. And it creates this whole self-fulfilling beast.
So now, are your thoughts that we're over-treating?
We are over-screening. We are over-biopsying. We are over-treating. Many of these cancers would never come to fruition. Many of these cancers would never have presented. They would never have become clinically relevant. But because we are screening for them, we are finding things that are not meaningful. But once these things are found, women get on this hamster wheel of breast cancer treatment. And unfortunately, many of the treatments for breast cancer actually cause more disease. And so we take a woman who never would have died of breast cancer, and now we consign her to heart disease, to dementia, to osteoporosis. There are tremendous consequences to our breast cancer treatments. Now, if you have an aggressive cancer, you need those. You need those. And I am not throwing the baby out with the bathwater. I appreciate that we have come a long way. We have developed a lot of things that help a lot of women who need it. But we are also giving those same things to women who don't need it and causing them more problems than is necessary.
How do you differentiate between a cancer that's not going to become something and something that is? Because, you know, I've seen both sides of that coin where, you know, you've got some doctors who are saying, let's wait and see, right? Let's wait and see. And you've got other doctors that are, you know, jumping in to treat. We've seen patients who have declined treatment and try to address their issues holistically, who then progress to stage four cancer. So how do you know, whether you're one of those that needs to be treated or whether it's a wait and see situation?
Well, thankfully now we have a screening test that can actually determine which is an aggressive process and which is not. And so QT imaging was FDA approved about a year and a half ago. And this is imaging that uses sound waves in order to create a three-dimensional image. And It has 40 times the resolution of MRI, but beyond that, beyond the images just being better, this is functional imaging, which means that we can actually count the cells and measure the doubling time. And when you see a lesion in the breast, you can bring someone back in 60 days and make a determination as to what the doubling time is. And we know that cancers have a doubling time of 100 days or less. And things that are not malignant have a longer doubling time, more than 100 days, 200 days, 300 days. And so you can make a determination based on that, who even needs to take that next step, be biopsied, that kind of thing.
Now, doesn't the biopsy determine if it's malignant or not?
Well, before QT, yes.
Okay.
But now we have technology that can do that, that can say which is an aggressive process and which is not. Mm. And then after you do a biopsy and you get a diagnosis and you can look at the biological factors associated with that tumor and make a determination as to how aggressive it is and how aggressive you need to be in terms of treatment.
And this is a non-radiation modality. Like I was told I needed a 3D mammogram, you know, when I felt my lump. But my understanding is that there's a lot of radiation that comes with a 3D mammogram. Is that right?
That's exactly right. It's 2 to 3 times more radiation than the standard two-dimensional 4-image mammogram, because for all intents and purposes, it's a CAT scan. Okay. It's a CAT scan of the breast.
And for women who have dense breasts, is the standard of care now these 3D mammograms? Has that kind of become the thing?
I mean, the standard of care basically is 3D mammograms across the board. Mm. And nowhere are women informed as to the fact that they are getting exposed to 2 to 3 times more radiation than previous mammograms. And when I hear the radiologists talk about, well, you know, it's the same amount of radiation that you would get flying cross country, and you would never tell someone to not fly cross country. But we are not talking about the same thing. The radiation that you get when you're on an airplane is equally distributed throughout the body. The radiation that you get while you're getting a mammogram is concentrated to the tissues of the breast. And it is concentrated to the tissues of the breast while your breast is under compression. So you're having physical trauma and then radiating that physical trauma. So it is far more damaging than the radiation that you would be getting on an airplane ride. So I hate that argument. And I think it's really deceptive. And it gives women a false sense of confidence of going to have a mammogram. But mammograms do not save lives. And no matter how many mammograms we do every year, we have the exact same number of women present with aggressive disease. No matter how many mammograms we do every year, we have the exact same number of women die of breast cancer. So we are not impacting the bottom line. And the only solution here is to have women understand how to prevent breast cancer. And, you know, we are not going to entirely prevent it, but we can do a whole heck of a lot better. And one of the greatest things we can do is to stop screening with mammogram. We need to stop using a test that causes cancer to screen for cancer, because we are creating the very disease we say we are trying to help with.
Before you jumped on, Dr. Simmons, Sarah and I were talking about a friend of ours who recently had found a lump. And so she went in to have it checked out, but she did not want to get a mammogram. She was concerned about the radiation. And the nurse who handled her case was aggressive and angry at her reluctance to sustain the radiation and really kind of unwilling to work with her in any way. Where do you think that anger and that resentment comes from when a patient experiences or kind of says, I have concerns about this? Because really that experience was trying to make her feel bad for voicing her concerns and for advocating for herself in this way. And I think that's interesting. We see that a lot. There seems to be this perception within the medical community that people who say things like this, who have concerns about radiation, are uneducated and just don't know better. What do you think about that dynamic?
The funny thing is that if you asked any physician if radiation causes cancer, they would 100% universally say yes. Mm-hmm. And then you ask those same physicians if mammograms cause breast cancer, and they universally say no. It's like we gave it this kind name, mammogram, take a picture of your breast, right? We gave it this kind name and they forget what it is. And this is the hill that they're going to die on because they have been so brainwashed. They have been so ingrained to believe that mammograms save lives. But let's talk about where that came from, because that is born on a premise that if you find breast cancer early, you will save someone's life. Now, that needs to mean that breast cancer growth is both linear and predictable. But breast cancer, unlike other cancers, because there are other cancers like colon cancer, which is both linear and predictable, breast cancer is not. So there are very small breast cancers, which are seemingly early, which are very aggressive, and very large tumors, which are not aggressive at all. They don't have any preponderance for spread.
When you're saying aggressive, like, and I want to kind of speak to, because maybe this is what's coming up for me, I want to speak to the people who are survivors out there. When you're saying aggressive, is this like a high oncotype score? Is this like a cancer that's growing quickly? Or explain aggressive.
Aggressive means that it has aggressive biology, that it is growing quickly, and that it is resistant to most of our modalities of treatment. And when we look at these tumors under a microscope, they do not resemble normal tissue. So many of these aggressive processes, we see they lack estrogen receptors, they lack progesterone receptors, they lack HER2 receptors, because those are all normal components of breast cells. They also, their cells look very abnormal. They don't have normal arrangement. They are not forming ducts like normal tissue would form ducts. So they represent a far departure from normal cells, and they are very immature. They are the very, very naughty ones in the playground.
Got it. I want to get into your journey, because you were a breast surgeon. You did this for 17 years, and then you kind of started realizing that health was more than just medical procedures. And I kind of want to know about that evolution and what got you there. Yeah. But before we jump into that, you want to do Boobs in the News?
Let's do it.
Boobs in the News is a fun segment where we read funny tweets by real people or ridiculous news stories.
Boobs in the News. Boobs in the News. Boobs in the News.
So I did watch the video. So there's a video attached to this one. Basically, I don't even want to give you the title.
You never want to give the title.
I know. Well, it gives it away. Okay. It says, man stages gunpoint robbery to propose to girlfriend in wild video.
Okay. That doesn't tell me anything. So
what?
Great.
It tells you everything. Okay. So in Columbia, so not like Columbia, Missouri or Columbia, Illinois. This is
Columbia,
the country. Yeah. Columbia. This man wanted to propose to his girlfriend, and I'm just wondering, like, okay, does she have some sort of fetish?
This
of
feels like
being
a
cartel.
This feels like a cartel situation.
It really totally is. It looks like it. So they pull up to the stop sign, and you can like watch the whole video. They pull up to the stop sign. The car gets surrounded like by motorcycles and guys running at them, and like they open their doors, rip open the doors, and tell them to get out, and like they're surrounding them. And then the guys sort of had been surrounding them, and it looks like this guy's got a gun, but it's in like one of those like Lululemon looking like holster bags, you know?
What is happening?
And so you're like, oh my gosh, these poor people. And then all the guys who had surrounded just kind of back away, and it's just her boyfriend who had been driving the car, who's then proposing to her.
That is so messed up.
Yeah, right?
That is so messed up. Well, you know what that would look like if that were my proposal?
Well, first of all,
I'd be like, I'm sorry, I'm wet. Like, I can't. Like,
I just pissed my pants.
This isn't romantic when the smell of urine is permeating
right.
the air.
Oh my gosh.
What in the world?
I don't know.
That's not right.
That makes me wonder, like, someone must have some kind of fetish about being held at gunpoint or something. I don't know.
Ew. There's so much about that that's gross. I can't even go there.
Yeah.
That's hysterical and gross and weird and scary.
Yeah. Okay. I don't know. Like, in my brain, I'm also going, who's the boob? The guy who arranged this to ask his girlfriend to marry him that way? Or the girl who said yes after
that? Did she look happy?
Yeah, after she, like, gave him a hug, it was all like, oh.
Oh, meant to get. Okay, maybe they're meant for each other.
Maybe their, like, relationship is just full of drama.
I don't want to say anything bad about these people, because if they are with the cartel, they're going to come find me. And they're going to be like, I heard you didn't like my proposal.
I mean, it's just, you know, to each their own. It's just not my proposal.
Oh, my gosh. There's your boob.
Bibs in the news. Bibs in the news. Bibs in the news.
All right. So we're back. Dr. Simmons, tell me how your practice has evolved over time. You know, what happened to where you started looking at medicine differently?
We get so ingrained in what is right, and we're so self-righteous, and we believe that this is right and that we know better. And, you know, it's a very paternalistic medical system where doctor knows best. And if you're not following what I'm telling you to do in the way that I'm telling you to do it, you're just being difficult. And, you know, I don't have time for this. I was completely 100% in that conventional medical world. And then I got diagnosed with Graves' disease. And as I'm sitting in the office of my friend and colleague and physician, and he's telling me that I need surgery and chemo radiation, and I'm going to be on lifelong thyroid hormone replacement. And all I could think about was, why would God give me a thyroid gland only to remove it, be radiated, and have to take lifelong synthetic hormone replacement? Like, it doesn't make sense to me. And I walked away from that office, even though my doctor told me I would die if I wasn't treated. I walked away from that office on a mission to find a better way. And I was very fortunate to meet Mark Hyman very early along in my process, because God gives you what you need when you need it. And I could have never been able to see or appreciate what he was talking about before I had my own diagnosis, before I had my own life-threatening illness, before I had my own opportunity to take the blinders off. And so it was a terrifying time in my life where professionally, I was literally relying on the fact that I had done that for 20 years, so I could do it in my sleep, more or less, mm-hmm. which was good because I wasn't getting any sleep. But I had to work really hard to heal and educate myself along the way. But once I did, once I learned about functional medicine, once I learned about root cause medicine, once I learned that we were only managing symptoms in the conventional medical world, and we weren't actually healing anyone. We weren't actually doing anything but taking them from disease A to disease B. So once I learned all of that, it was a bell that I couldn't unring, and I didn't feel that I could continue to be a surgeon and act in integrity inside of that medical system. And I left.
How is that received? How is that received by your family, by your friends, by your colleagues?
The same exact way I initially received Dr. Mark Hyman, because when he introduced himself as a functional medicine physician, I said in my head, I've been a doctor for 20 years. There's no such thing as a functional medicine physician. What is this quack talking about? And so my colleagues thought that I lost my mind, but that was 5 years ago. And now the same colleagues are saying to the patients, if I were you, I would go see Dr. Jen Simmons.
What about, we talk about all the time that functional medicine is kind of the wild, wild west, right? You piqued my interest because you came from training as a breast surgeon, right? And you kind of were immersed in that cancer world, and then you made the transition to functional medicine. I think my own bias tells me, like, you know, I put a lot more stock in somebody who's a medically trained doctor who then transitions to functional medicine versus somebody on the street that just claims to practice functional medicine. I mean, what is the danger of patients seeking out a functional medicine doctor that's not adequately trained or doesn't really understand this whole body approach? Because I think that would be the fear, right? Is I'm gonna try to do this naturally because my body's trying to tell me something. You know, something's not right. I don't have a hospitable environment for my body to be operating effectively. But then they go to see the wrong person, or they get the wrong treatments, and then they find themselves in a catastrophic situation.
Listen, I think that happens everywhere. I think it happens in conventional medicine. I think it happens in functional medicine. I think that there are people that just don't know what they don't know, but that if you're going to see someone who understands about whole body health, who understands about functional medicine, who understands about hormonal health, who understands about toxic exposures and detoxification and all of those things, I think that that's a pretty safe situation. I think if you have an invasive cancer, it's a totally different story. But there are lots of people out there who are maybe don't have my exact training, because I know that there's like one of me, but people who have a medical oncology background, a naturopathic oncology background. You know, there are people with oncologic training. And so maybe it's better to seek out one of those rather than, you know, someone who just has functional medicine training. And yes, it is a little bit like the wild, wild west. I think that that's changing. I think more people are realizing the benefits of this holistic approach. It's maybe not changing as fast as I would like it to. And I think that the conventional medical world is going to hold on as tightly as they can to what they've been doing. But in places like USC, for instance, the University of Southern California, where Walter Longo is doing his research, you know, they're already realizing that the way that you eat highly influences how you do around breast cancer treatment, and that the women that are getting chemotherapy at the University of Southern California, they are fasting around their chemotherapy in order to increase efficacy, so have better outcomes, and also to have less side effects. So things are changing. They're not universally changing, and they're not changing quickly enough, but they are changing.
While I have you, I have another question, and it's actually something that I feel like I run into all the time. Just as younger survivors, I meet more and more women who's like, oh, my friend was diagnosed and she was, you know, 36 or 38. And I'm thinking, you know, here they're the same age and they're going, I'm thinking about starting my mammograms early. And I think like, wow, what genius marketing that, you know, that they're putting out there that, you know, mammograms do save lives, like you say, to get these 30-year-olds thinking that they need to start earlier. And I always kind of cringe and never know really what to say about how to, like, what can I tell people when they're like, I'm thinking about starting my, you know, a yearly whatever sooner.
Yeah.
What do you say to people like that?
Yeah. The more mammograms you have in your life, the more likely you are to get breast cancer.
So what would give them an ease of having some sort of follow-up?
So that's what we started to talk about in the very beginning. And so I do want to say this. Screening does not save lives. It doesn't. But people need to feel like they have some control, and they need to feel like they're taking some active role. And so if that is where you are, if you just are one of those people that you have to know, and you have to be active, and you have to be proactive, and self-exam is not enough for you, like you feel like you need more, then I recommend there will be a perfection imaging, a QT imaging near you very soon, because I'm making sure that they are going to be universally available across this country. And until then, you can do thermography and ultrasound, but there is no reason ever to do screening mammogram. It does not save lives. It will increase your risk of getting breast cancer, and it will only lead to more and more studies that you don't need. There is no reason ever for anyone to use mammogram for screening.
All right. Well, before we kind of finish up, let's hear from our second sponsor.
Thrivent is a proud sponsor of Faith Through Fire. Thrivent believes money is a tool and not a goal. The Gateway Financial Group with Thrivent is local to the St. Louis area and can work with you to create a financial strategy that reflects your priorities and helps you protect the things that matter to you, like family and giving back. Please call 314-783-4214 to schedule a free consultation with one of Thrivent's Gateway Financial Advisors. All right, we are back. Do you have any words that you would like to leave the audience with today?
At the end of the day, I always tell people breast health is health. And the same things that you're doing to make healthy breasts are going to create a healthy heart, a healthy brain, healthy bones, healthy muscles, healthy joints, healthy skin, And so what we're talking about now is eating in a way that is right for you and is free of as many toxins and processed foods as you can be, prioritizing sleep and movement, avoiding excess toxin exposure, and living a connected, purpose-driven life. For anyone who is just wants to be preventative, I have the Breast Owner's Manual, and we'll be sure to provide you the link. For anyone anywhere along their breast cancer journey, I have the Smart Person's Guide to Breast Cancer, which will help you to help to educate you as far as what having breast cancer means, help you read your pathology report, help you know what to ask your doctors, and help you plan for the treatment that's right for you, and then gives you a follow-up plan for what to do after breast cancer is treated. And then for anyone who wants to hear more from me, I have a weekly podcast called Keeping Abreast with Dr. Jen. You can find me there and on all the social outlets at Dr. Jen Simmons. And my Jen has two N's.
Perfect. Thank you so much for coming on and sharing your knowledge and experience with us. We really appreciate it.
It's my pleasure. So great to be with you guys.
All right.
Until next time, guys. See ya.
Thank you for being a listener of the Besties with Breasties podcast. If this podcast had a positive impact on your journey, leave us a review or consider becoming a supporter. You can donate with the link in the show notes or at faiththroughfire.org. This episode was hosted by Sarah Hall and Beth Wilmes, audio and production edits by Innovative Frequencies.